Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Tech Loft podcast. I'm your host, Sal. And before I get into this episode, I just want to remind everyone to please subscribe, comment, and like this podcast, if you like it, on the platforms that you're listening to, whether it be Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts, or I don't know, whatever. Maybe YouTube if I have it listed on there, if I have time. But please, and leave a comment if there's anything you want, maybe you'd want to see, or something that I should change for this podcast, either production wise or the direction of the news content that I try to bring forward and share. But yeah, let's get on with it. In this episode, we got a bit. Four little articles I have here. We have some privacy ones, some video game ones, and even a little thing, some crypto hardware news. But yeah, let's get on with the show. All right, folks, let's take a look at our first article. The first one is social media accounts should require proof of ID according to an Australian government proposal. Wow. Now you're going to have to. Now, I've seen this somewhere on YouTube just recently where Facebook is asking for you to upload ID into their database. And they ain't going to get that from me. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. Me, myself, leaving Facebook is long overdue. It's something on my list to do. And leave Facebook. It's just a platform that I just want to get away from their garbage. That's the only way I can put it, with their censoring very evident. And I think I've had enough. But let's move on to this article about ID. Now this is a privacy topic here. So Australia's federal government is considering a proposal to require internet users to submit several forms of identification before they're allowed to obtain or even just maintain social media accounts on platforms like Facebook and Twitter, according to shocking reports from several news outlets in Australia. The extraordinary proposal seeks to ban all anonymous commenting on the internet in Australia and is being made under the guise of helping victims of domestic violence. Of course, there's always something hidden behind something else. The recommendations come from a 471-page study released on Tuesday by the Australian House of Representatives Standing Committee on Social Policy and Legal Affairs, which heard testimony from representatives of big tech like Google and Facebook. The two names that I really don't care for anymore. From the Australian government study, here's the following. In order to maintain an existing social media account, customers should be required by law to identify themselves to a platform using 100 points of identification. In the same way, a person must provide identification for a mobile phone account or to buy a mobile SIM card. First of all, you shouldn't be required for so much identification to buy a mobile SIM card. The next point, social media platforms must provide those identifying details when requested by the eSafety Commissioner. I guess that's an Australian office, law enforcement, or as directed by court. Wow. The term 100 points of identification refers to an Australia-specific program originally introduced to cut down on bank fraud. Different forms of ID are assigned points. Oh, I see. And the points must equal or exceed 100 points for someone to open a bank account. For example, birth certificates and passports are worth 70 points each, while domestic driver's license are worth 40 points. And credit cards are worth 25 points. A birth certificate and a credit card would only equal 95 points, requiring one more form of ID to get beyond 100. Okay, so that's what it means. They've assigned a point system to pieces of ID, and they've got to be over 100. They probably just set it up so you need to provide as much ID as possible to just to get to 100. While no Australian politician has yet been quoted in national media about the proposal, the chairman of the committee released a statement about the 88 recommendations being put forward, including calls to provide domestic abuse survivors with more financial security and launching a national campaign to educate the public on different forms of coercion in relationship. I've heard that one. You're going to hear a lot about coercion in the future. Not about privacy, though, among, for other things. Let's move on. The committee's recommendations are wide-ranging, but our clear message is that we need a more coordinated and comprehensive national approach to ending all forms of family, domestic, and sexual violence, says Liberal Party MP Andrew Wallace in a statement published online. It is the perpetrators that are responsible for their use of violence, but everyone has a role in bringing about change and stopping violence before it starts, end quote. The bizarre proposal to require ID to receive or just maintain a Facebook account still leaves plenty of questions about how it would be implemented. The report also suggests that law enforcement agencies in Australia be permitted access to encrypted data, something that would require companies like Apple and Signal to build backdoors for their technologies. Here's another excerpt from the report. The government should consider regulating to enable law enforcement agencies to access a platform's end-to-end encrypted data by warrant in matters involving a threat to the physical or mental well-being of an individual or in cases of national security. The proposals come at a time of tremendous turmoil in the Australian government as its ruling Liberal Party, under Prime Minister Scott Morrison. Multiple scandals ripple through the capital city of Canberra, most involving sexual assaults and harassment of women. Christian Porter, a now former general attorney of Australia, was accused of committing rape in 1988 when he was 17 years old against a 16-year-old girl, an allegation he strongly denies. The woman who made the accusation killed herself last year, but the allegations were only made public recently. Porter, who has sued the national broadcaster ABC News for defamation, has been demoted from his position of general attorney but remains a member of the government. Another scandal involves a conservative staffer named Brittany Higgins, who says she was raped in parliament after hours by a fellow staffer 2 years ago. The incident was swept under the rug and has become a national scandal regarding who in the government knew about the rape and why the staffer wasn't given more support before exiting politics entirely. Other women have come forward with their own stories about sexual assault in the wake of Higgins' report. Yet another scandal involves an infamous online troll for the Liberal Party named Andrew Laming, who has been harassing people online for years, but has received renewed attention after one of his constituents said she became suicidal from all the online abuse. Prime Minister Scott Morrison has refused to denounce Laming and expel him from the Liberal Party. One thing that's notable about Laming's online harassment, he did it all under his own name on platforms like Facebook without any kind of ID requirement. So, you know, this is really weird, supplying Facebook and Twitter your ID, and then you've got these rape and assaults happening in politics. Maybe the political arena in Australia should be cleaned up and taken a closer look at, rather than focusing on the social media, the requirements of 100 points worth of ID to open up a Facebook account. Mind you, that last point was something that was done over line. He was guilty of online, but yet he was doing it under his own name. So, I mean, I just don't understand. But this is where we're moving towards, folks. If this is happening in Australia, you bet it's going to carry across globally, where Facebook is going to want you to upload your driver's license, passport, just to prove you are who you are, to have a social media account. And if I'm ever forced to do that, it'll make my decision to leave Facebook even quicker. That's just total BS. But what's the point? You know what I mean? Anyways, that is that. We have some privacy issues with social media accounts and requiring proof of ID. Interesting. Interesting. Be on the lookout for more of that, I would say. Okay, moving on to our next article here is a fun little news article. A sealed Super Mario Brothers is now the most expensive video game ever. And just to give you an idea before I tell you how much, the previous record was held by a copy of Super Mario Brothers 3 that sold for $156,000. So though this sealed copy of Super Mario Brothers for the Nintendo Entertainment System was originally listed for $310,000 US, the title ended up selling for $660,000, making it the most expensive game ever. This number nearly triples the cost of the previously most expensive video game, a sealed copy of Super Mario Brothers 3 for $156,000, sold back in November of 2020. A copy of Super Mario Brothers also sold for $114,000 back in July of 2020. Here's a little quote from Heritage Auction about the sale. "Not only is this the finest plastic sealed copy with a perforated cardboard hang tab we've ever offered of any black box title, it is also the oldest sealed copy of Super Mario Brothers we've ever had the opportunity to offer. This is only the fourth version of Super Mario Brothers ever produced, and its window of production was remarkably short. Just to paint a better picture of how short this really was, the nationwide release for the console came in mid to late 1986, and Black Box Games distributed for that release did not have the GamePack NES GP code. It's worth mentioning that Nintendo managed to add the trademark symbol to the Nintendo Entertainment System on the back on their game boxes by the beginning of 1987. That certainly doesn't leave much time at all for this variant to be produced in between the two. So if you want to check out the link, I can put it when I post this video on my website. The auction lists the sealed game as a WATA 9.6 A+ sealed, indicating that it is in near perfect condition. Since its release back in 1985, Super Mario Brothers had sold 48.24 million copies, making it the highest selling Mario title ever released, with Mario Kart for the Wii coming in at 37.38 million and Mario Kart 8 Deluxe for the Switch at 33.41 million. All things considered, it's, well, I don't know if it's, you know, my current house is currently worth the cost of two Super Mario Brother. I'm guessing it's worth the cost of two of these Super Mario Brother cartridges. depending where I live and all that stuff. But yeah, there you go. Interesting news. Vintage gaming, very valued at very high prices. That's a fun little article I just wanted to share with you guys. All right, now this article here is a bit of a shocker. I'm shocked myself, and I'll tell you why. MLB The Show 21 is coming to Xbox Game Pass on day one. It's a bit strange to think about a PlayStation-developed game coming to Game Pass, but here we are, ladies and gentlemen. Xbox has announced that MLB The Show 21 will be available on its Game Pass service on April 20th, the same day it launches on Xbox and other platforms. In addition to Xbox One and Xbox Series XS, the baseball sim will be offered on Android via Game Pass for $16.99 Well, that's Canadian a month for an alt, and that's at the ultimate tier. This is a particularly notable addition to Game Pass, since this is the first time MLB The Show has ever been on Xbox. That's because PlayStation had the exclusive rights to the series up until last year, after which time the MLB signed a new deal with the company. Under this agreement, PlayStation San Diego Studio will still develop the popular long-running series, with Sony Interactive Entertainment continuing to handle publishing duties. However, the MLB is now able to bring the game to other platforms beyond PlayStation. In February, PlayStation confirmed that MLB The Show 21 will support cross saves and cross progressions between PS4 and PS5 and Xbox One and Xbox Series XS. MLB The Show 21 will join such sports games as Madden, NFL 21, and NBA 2K21 on the Game Pass catalog. Wow. So that's why. So now there's some things that I didn't know. I didn't know that MLB, is it that MLB owns this game, MLB The Show, and Sony just helps develop it with their studio, San Diego Studio. And I guess that's the impression I'm getting here, because if Major League Baseball says, yeah, you can develop the game, but we want it available on all platforms, it looks like MLB calls the shots for this. I think it's their baby. So I thought, all this time I thought it was a PlayStation game, not just developed, but owned. But yeah, so there you go. MLB The Show is going consoles across all consoles. Very interesting news right there. So damn, that kind of sucks, because I know that that game is pretty popular with many people, and probably a draw of the PlayStation system was MLB, but now you can get it on other consoles and all that, even Android, it says here. So well, there you go, things are moving ahead. And now that brings me to our last article that I wanted to share. This is for you crypto mining people out there, miners. AMD is they're getting into the mining game, and AMD is making crypto mining GPUs to tackle the global chip shortage. So AMD is on its way to follow NVIDIA's footsteps and may release its own lineup of crypto mining graphic cards based on the RDNA GPU architecture. Much like NVIDIA's Motive, AMD is also reportedly doing so to address the global shortage of chip supply. This isn't the first time that AMD has targeted the crypto mining market, as an AMD Navi 10 GPU was spotted in Linux kernel patches in October last year. These cards lacked essential technologies for gaming and had no display output capabilities. Now, another AMD GPU based on the RDNA architecture has been spotted on the Linux kernel patches, and it appears to be made on the Navi 12 SKU. The kernel patch from March 3rd also mentions that this graphic card lacks gaming capabilities. Very interesting. So so your mainstream graphic manufacturers here, they're mining GPUs do not include gaming, gaming chips or gaming technologies. So would that make it cheaper? Or no, I'm not sure. Additionally, Michael Larrabell, editor of Foronix, had said that AMD is soon going to announce Bitcoin crypto mining GPUs based on the RDNA architecture. He said that there is a lack of details available on this mysterious GPU, but it could be similar to the previously reported on the Navi 10 blockchain graphics card. However, if AMD does not release its own line of mining GPUs, we can't expect them to limit the hash rate on its existing or upcoming GPU to tackle the crypto mining market. Regardless, All of this is based on speculation, and we would recommend taking it with a grain of salt until there's more information on AMD's upcoming release. So look at that. AMD wants to get into the GPU mining game here, but also wants to help out with the chip shortage. So for those of you in the mining game, now again, this is the, as the article said, it's pure speculation. So who knows if it's even true, but yeah, I thought I'd bring this, share this little article with everyone out there. See if they're interested in what AMD may have on the horizon. Well, that's it for this episode of the Tech Loft Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this quick little tidbit of information that I bring to the table. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, there is a Twitter account that you can leave your comments on. It's at the Tech Loft. So you can send a message or leave a suggestion or whatever through that channel there. If you've enjoyed this episode, please give it a like, a thumbs up. If you're not subscribed already and are thinking about it, please do subscribe. This podcast is available on several platforms, even platforms that I don't even know about, but we're there. And that's it. And that's it for this week. Until next week, I'm your host, Sal. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you then. Ciao for now.